This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at @DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here with special co-host Eric Dahl.
Hey, hey, hey.
So, Mr. Dahl, we're here recording after the close today on November 4th, 2022. It's Fed week. We turned the corner into November, and it certainly feels like there's a little bit of more of a chill in the air here in Southern California. I've been complaining about the weather a lot this week, where it seems to have fallen below the 70s. So I've got been wearing a lot of flannel jackets around, and my wife is walking around with a beanie on her head. So even in the house,
yeah, man. I mean, with electricity prices where they are, you got to bundle up.
That being said, I took a look at as I refresh the market data. It looks like nat gas futures are responding accordingly to that. They're up 14% on a week-to-date basis, which I guess isn't too unprecedented for this kind of strange year that we've had in commodity land. But it is Fed week this week, so I'll stop my rambling and I'll take us into where we are in terms of what we saw in the markets this past week. So starting off with the S&P 500, the S&P 500 is negative, down 3.3% on the week. The usual winner here with the energy sector up 2.4% for the week, and looks like comm services and as well as tech. Some of these growthier names within these sectors took a little bit of a drubbing this past week, given the earnings season. But both of those are down well over 6%, over 6.5%. In fact, with comm services down 6.8% on the week. That this poor showing for the week ending November 4th brings the S&P closer to that down almost 20% on a year-to-date basis. Looking across in terms of the Russell 1000 versus 2000, both were down just around 3% or so for the week, pretty even there. But when we take a look at the growth versus the value, as I alluded to earlier, Russell 1000 growth got hurt a little bit more than the value side. Russell 1000 growth is down 5.75%, whilst the value index is down 1.3%. Moving over to what we saw in the fixed income space, looks like the curve from the twos out to the 30s were higher this week on the back of the FOMC day. The two-year Treasury note is, it closed the week at 4.66. And I saw earlier when I was scanning the week's moves, I saw that the two-year got as high as 4.8 on the yield. Was it yesterday? It was today, actually. 4.8 was the high for the intraday high, but it's managed to settle back in a little bit at 4.66. That's up 24 basis points over where it closed last Friday. Similar type theme as you move out the curve. The 10-year Treasury note yield was up higher 16 basis points over previous week to close at 4.17% on the yield, and the bond was up 13 basis points higher to close at 4.27% this week. One thing of note is also the spread between the 10-year yield and the 2-year got more inverted. It's down, it's at the negative 50 basis points. Today, I did see that a note from Jim Reed over at Deutsche Bank on his morning note saying that at one point during the week it got as inverted as somewhere around 57 basis points, if memory serves, making it the worst or the most inverted going back to see the early 80s or so. As you know, listeners know here that we do see the spread between the tens and the twos as a indicator, an early one of a potential recession being sniffed out by the bond market there. So inverted, no good. And with that, seeing here that the differential between the 10-year and the 3-month yields actually went positive again. So it had gone inverted last Wednesday, I wanted to say, and I think it stayed that way for up until at least the FOMC day. So I believe that hits our 5-day of consecutive inversion mark to show that the 3-month and 10-year differential there had signaled a recession around the corner as well. So we did get that confirmed, I would say, between those two parts of the yield curve, albeit today the 3-month 10-year at least is positive by 4 basis points here. What all this meant for the broader bond index, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is down 70 basis points on a week-to-date basis, down almost 16% on the year-to-date. Looking across the outperformers within the fixed income sectors, EM was up 82 basis points. Bank loans looks like it just ended the week right around flat for the week. The worst performer was the high-yield corporate credit sector, perhaps in sympathy alongside the S&P 500 negative performance, but that high-yield corporate credit sector was down almost 2% on the week. But with that, all three primary constituents with underlying the ag, the IG corporate credit down 50 basis points, agency mortgage-backed securities down 80 basis points, and the worst performer was the treasury sector down 90 basis points for the week. But looking at it here again, the IG corporate credit maintained its underperformance relative to S&P 500, even it's down 22% year to date on the IG corporate credit index. Relative to the S&P 500, which is outperforming by about 2 percentage points there. Not normal, of course, for us to kind of compare and contrast there, but it is interesting to see the IG corporate credit space underperforming that risk asset there and dragging down the overall broader bond index through the Bloomberg Ag. Moving over to commodities here, let's take a look. Commodities look like they got a little bit of a boost from a weaker dollar. The DXY index now just hovering, it's just a little bit below 111, down 1.25% on a week-to-date basis. But that little bit of a tailwind there helped commodities and propel them to a plus, it's about 5.25% on a week-to-date basis, positive there for the commodity space, bringing the year-to-date in commodities up 20%. And then finally, when we take a look at the Bitcoin space, Bitcoin continued to remain above that 20,000 mark. It actually climbed just a little bit above 21,000 as of the point of its recording, making it up over 2% on the week-to-date basis, still down over 50% though on the year-to-date. So definitely some bigger moves that we saw this week, especially across the traditional asset classes, the S&P 500 and the bond index, which may be more sensitive to some of the Fed rate, the immediacy of the Fed rate moves that we had. I would say the commodity market did get a little bit of a reprieve from a weaker dollar, but also I saw some news today. It seems like it's been back and forth a little bit in terms of the zero COVID policy and perhaps relaxing some of that, some of those restrictions is what I saw most recently today. But that seems to be conflicting with some of the more official statements that have come out since the National Congress meeting that they had a few weeks ago there. So today's was kind of unofficial news, but I've seen that being mentioned as as the catalyst for today's pop in the commodity markets. And people are thinking that perhaps that zero COVID policy could be potentially relaxed in the coming months, particularly through some of their air travel policies there. So we'll stay tuned on that and keep people informed as we get more information. But with that wrap up of the markets, Dahl, do you want to kick us off on what happened in the macro front this week?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely was a week that was driven by one major event, but we'll kind of kick it off on Tuesday. kind of as a premonition to that event. On Tuesday, we had the Jolt's job openings for September come out, and they printed at 10.7 million, which was almost 800,000 over the estimate. And that's the Jolt's are kind of indicative of the gap between supply and demand in the labor market. And that strong print, I think, factored into the Federal Reserve's decision to increase interest rates on Wednesday. And it factored into the thinking of the FOMC and the chair, Mr. Powell. So that, I think, was a pretty important print going into the FOMC meeting on Wednesday. Tuesday, we had ISM manufacturing for October come out, and it printed at 50.2, which was still in expansionary territory. The streak of expansion continues at 29 prints in a row. So, I mean, that's pretty incredible. I mean, we've been talking about a slowdown in activity, but it's still in expansionary territory. So I think the takeaway is the economy's been resilient in the face of the rate hikes and the financial volatility and financial tightening we've seen this year. On that note, on Wednesday, we saw the ADP employment change for October come out at 239K positive, which was a beat of 54,000 over expectations, once again showing strength in the labor market. And without further ado, that leads us to the topic of the week, which we'll dive into details, but the FOMC rate decision. The Federal Reserve raised the target rate by 0.75% to 3.75 to 4% range. And I really think, like, the cliff notes for that, we're going to really dive into the details there. But the cliff notes for that is the Fed, their statement gave the market hope. The market rallied after the statement was released because it looked kind of dovish. But when Mr. Powell came out, he delivered a pretty simple message that I'm going to summarize as winter is coming. And there was a huge repricing of all assets after his press conference. And we're going to dive into that in granular detail, but that was his message. You know, yeah.
the markets seemed to get worse with every minute that passed. And I think he was a little bit happy with it. We'll discuss that a little bit more, as you mentioned. But I did like Gundlach was out on CNBC with Wapner at the Schwab event, and he did make mention of the using the analogy of Lucy pulling the football on Charlie Brown as Charlie Brown's running, you know, to kick the field goal. You know, and that's kind of what Powell did to the markets.
Yeah.
A little bit of the other way around, bro.
Absolutely. So that was a really seminal event for the week. I think that's the main thing for our listeners to be keyed up on. But we'll get into that in the topic of the week. And then I think wrapping up Friday today, we had the non-farm payrolls come out for October, and they came in strong, 261,000, 68,000 more than expectations. It was a big beat. The unemployment rate actually ticked up to 3.7% from the previous print of 3.6%. And that was driven by a decline in labor force participation from 62.3% to 62.2%. The underemployment rate stayed flat at 6.8%. And I think overall, those labor numbers are indicating that the job market has been resilient. You know, the job market has been resilient. It hasn't been taken out by the financial tightening. But nonetheless, you heard about a big company this week. They're going to freeze hiring. Amazon is going to freeze hiring at their corporate level. So that's something to pay attention to. You're starting to hear this kind of theme in the economy that companies are pressing the brakes because they see the Federal Reserve is hitting the brakes full pressure on the brakes. And so it's definitely going to be a a tough scenario going forward, and we're going to have to be watching all these prints to see how monetary policy impacts the labor market. And with that, kind of that segues us to our topic of the week.
Yeah, so this, you know, as we always do after the FOMC meetings, we give on Monday morning minutes here, we give a recap of some of the highlights or some of the more standout items that we grabbed from the press conference there. And I think my summary, I guess, of this press conference would be that I think a lot of doves were downed in the making of this press conference here. And, you know, Jay Powell was the hawk that took him out because he was absolutely on point. He made it very clear, his messaging, and he reiterated the, you know, it in pretty much every answer that he provided. And it was price stability and whatever it takes. When we took a look at the, you know, you mentioned the early release statement that they provided, and I think some people took it as that in combination with some of the, you know, if, you know, listeners will probably recall that we had mentioned that Nick Timiraos had come out and mentioned something about a potential step down, or at least, you know, the talking about that. And then also Mary Daly, the San Francisco Fed president, also kind of echoing that sentiment on the Friday going into the blackout period. Some people might have taken that as a dovish twist coming into, you know, both the November and the December meetings. And then with the statement coming out, some new language where they talked about the cumulative tightening of overall monetary policy needing to be taken into account when thinking about things. I think people took that as a dovish spin, but overall, when you take a look at what was, and I look back, that was new to the statement, but when you take a look at prior press conferences, at least the last two or three coming into that, that is language that Powell had been using when he either had his prepared remarks and or during the Q&A, the fact that the Fed would be looking at the cumulative impact of monetary policy up to that each point of the meeting's decision there. So I didn't really see that as something new, but somehow, I guess, you know, again, on the back of Timiraos, Daly, and then it appearing into the statement maybe got people a little excited because some people tried to trade off of that, and then they got severely whipsawed, you know, again, as Powell continued through his press conference there. But overall, with regards to the prepared remarks, some of the things that I noted was that it seemed to be similar in tone and wording as in past press conferences there. Some of the same, you know, themes that he talked about throughout was just the strong commitment to bringing inflation back to their longer term 2% goal, and the fact that they had both the tools and the resolve to restore that price stability. And then he went on to say further that without price stability, the economy does not work for anyone. And again, this is a similar sentiment that he's been repeating in his prepared remarks for the past few press conferences. Although this time he did call out a little bit more and say that in particular, without price stability, we will not achieve a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit everyone. And then they also continue to anticipate that ongoing increases will be appropriate. They're moving their policy stance purposefully to a level that will be sufficiently restrictive to return inflation to 2%. Again, that is something that isn't new, something that's been reiterated for the past few meetings, at least there. So the idea that they're going to require a restrictive stance on policy for some time. Later on in the press prepared remarks, he did acknowledge that there were parts of the economy that were starting to slow. Largely just the broader economy had slowed significantly from last year's rapid pace. But there are more recent indicators that also point to modest growth of both spending and production that in part reflected the lower real disposable income that consumers had on the consumer side, as well as the tighter financial conditions there. He did make mention of the activity in the housing sector having weakened significantly, and that largely was a reflection of the higher mortgage rates which came on the back of the higher Fed funds rate. So maybe a little bit of victory lap going on there. Subsequent in the press conference, he did make note that he doesn't think that this will lead to a housing crisis similar to, you know, what people have been worried about with regards to you know, perhaps a flashback to the global financial crisis era, as you know, the lending conditions and a lot of the underlying fundamentals have been different. But he did say that higher interest rates and slower output growth do appear to be weighing in on the business side of fixed income, or I'm sorry, of fixed investments as well. So hitting different parts of the economy, both the consumer and the business side, and that's kind of what their intention is through these more restrictive monetary policy. But then on the flip side, also within the prepared remarks, he said that despite the slowdown in growth, the labor market remains extremely tight, with the unemployment rate at a 50-year low, job vacancies still very high, as you mentioned, Dahl, and wage growth elevated. And then he goes on to say that the labor market continues to be out of balance, with demand substantially exceeding the supply of available workers. And as well, inflation remains well above their longer run goal of 2%, and the recent inflation data have again come in higher than expected. So definitely, you know, put the twist there, even within the prepared remarks on, you know, keeping the eyes on the prize of having to maintain price or trying to achieve price stability, and that there was still a lot of work to do, particularly in areas of the labor market, as well as the inflation portion of the price stability. So let's see here through the notes. They did continue to reiterate that it will take time. That's why, and then I'll quote here, that's why we say in our statement that in determining the pace of future increases in the target range, we will take into account the cumulative tightening of monetary policy and the lags with which monetary policy affects economic activity and inflation. So as I mentioned before, that this is kind of new to the statement, this cumulative tightening of monetary policy, as well as the lags with which monetary policy works. But these, again, aren't new to his past remarks that he's made at previous press conferences. So with that, he also says that we still have some ways to go, and incoming data since our last meeting suggests that the ultimate level of interest rates will be higher than previously expected. And I think that's where people started. That's when the market started turning right there, was when the prepared remarks did indicate that the so-called terminal rate would be higher than what they had previously expected. I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, we just came off the back of the September summary of economic projections, which indicated a median Fed funds rate in, I believe, it just in the year of 2023 at around 4.6 was where the so-called terminal rate would ultimately land. And I'm just confirming it.
That's right.
Website. Yep, 4.6. So kind of 4.75 on that upper bound. But what's interesting to me at that time is, you know, even since the summary of economic projections came out with that 4.75 on the upper bound within that median of 4.6, the market had been, up until this meeting, pricing in a kind of a terminal rate at around 5%, or maybe even a little bit higher than that. So when they do come out and say that, I do think that's a little bit even more hawkish, because I know in the past, Powell, as well as other members of the Fed, had come out and indicated that the market pricing seemed to be about where they were thinking about where rates would go. And this time, even though there was that deviation from where the market was pricing in the terminal rate at around 5% through the Fed funds futures, that was already higher than their September summary of economic, or their dots projection there. So that was pretty interesting to me, because yeah, it does seem that maybe they're saying that even now with the, or even then at the time of the presser, when they're pricing in five, the market is pricing in five, that might not even be enough. So now it looks like it could be going anywhere from, you know, up to maybe 5.25 at least for the terminal rate, based on some of the wording here that we saw in the prepared remarks. And then finally, he does say that the historical record cautions strongly against prematurely loosening policy. We will stay the course until the job is done. And that was towards the end of the prepared remarks. So definitely, I think he set aside some of those dovish thoughts right away, even through the prepared remarks. And it just got even more, I think, clear cut as we got through the Q&A section. So within that, moving to the Q&A side, I'm going to kind of brush through some of the the parts that I thought were a little bit more interesting. I think someone had asked a question if there was a bias towards 75 basis points in December, or would that be kind of the point where they slow down, they meaning the FOMC, perhaps indicating a 50 basis points in December instead of the 75, to which Powell responded, at some point, it'll be appropriate to slow the pace of increases. That time is coming, and it may come as soon as the next meeting, which would be the December meeting, or the one after that. And going forward, the focus is going to be on how high to raise rates and how long to keep monetary policy restricted. He did go on to say that he doesn't think that we've over-tightened. Part of the signal there is the fact that inflation is still so high. But then he does think there is a very difficult to make the case that the current level is too tight, given that the inflation rate still runs well above federal funds rate. And that is something that he's indicated in the past, that he does want to see real rates across the curve. It just depends on, you know, the trajectory of, you know, when the Fed funds rate through rate hikes is going to meet inflation, which I know they hope, or, you know, at least based on the September summary of economic projections, they had indicated that they had expected core PCE to be coming down. But again, it's been the other way around, where we are now at a high point again on core PCE. I want to say it's around 5.1%. And I'm looking at their projections for the rest of 2022, or for 2022, as being 4.5%. So the tick up that we just had recently in PCE, core PCE, wasn't what they're expecting. And looking here, it looks like they think that, or at least as of September, their median point for core PCE was to be 3.1% in 2023. So you definitely need to see an inflection in the trajectory of core PCE for them to feel a little bit more comfortable around that. Later on, someone had asked if there was any evidence that inflation is or is becoming entrenched. Powell came back and said that long-term inflation expectations don't show any signs right now. In fact, they've actually been moving lower. But of concern is that shorter-term expectations have moved up. And the reason that could be a concern is because he sees that as being important in setting wages for employees. There's a bit of hand-waving around there, but ultimately he got back to, and this is what I noticed as a theme through the answers in the subsequent questions, is that he just brought it back to the idea of that we're going to crush inflation and, you know, willing to tolerate softer labor and economy to get there. So he closes up that answer by saying that the thing we need to do from a risk management standpoint is to use our tools forcefully but thoughtfully, and get inflation under control, get it down to 2%, get it behind us. And that's what we really need to do. And that's what we are strongly committed to doing.
Winter is coming. Like I said, winter is coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was, it's funny. There's just a lot of hand waving in the beginning of these answers. But then at the end, he closes it up the same thing with the same clear message. In fact, let me jump forward to a couple questions here. I remember I had one that kind of put it off. So here's the questions that kind of left him a bit perturbed, let's say. Someone asked a question about the Fed put, and that individual said, it looks like the stock and bond markets are reacting positively to your announcement so far. Is that something you wanted to see? Is that a problem or what? How might that affect your future policy to see this positive reaction? And Powell basically just came back and said, what I'm trying to do is make sure that our message is clear. One of the points that he made after that was he thinks we have a ways to go. We have some ground to cover with interest rates before we get to that level of interest rates that we think is sufficiently restrictive. Then he goes on to say it's premature to discuss pausing. And it's not something that we're really thinking about. That's not really a conversation to be had now. We have a ways to go. And then again, he said, to kind of close out, he said, I would want people to understand our commitment to getting this done and to not making the mistake of not doing enough or the mistake of withdrawing our strong policy and doing that too soon. So those, you know, to achieve that, I control these messages and that's my job. So overall, I mean, that seemed to have been the theme of the answers to, you know, various questions that he had. But let me pull out a couple more things that he did mention here, or some of the questions that they had. On one of them was regarding the lag times, which again was the first time that I saw it in the prepared statements, in memory at least. But the question was, how do you judge the effects of lags, what the timeline looks like over the coming months or even a year, and where would you expect it to show up in different parts of the economy? He did say that it's a little bit different today with regards to the concept of a lag, because we are in a modern economy, and that one big difference is that it used to be that you would have to raise the federal funds rate and then financial conditions would react, and then that would affect economic activity and then inflation. Today, at least for the last 25 years, he says a quarter of a century here, financial conditions react well before an expectation of monetary policy shifts. Today, it's the direction of financial conditions, then monetary policy, because that's what the markets are thinking about. And they're thinking about what is the central bank going to do and anticipating it, and thus the reversal of that order that we had traditionally seen. And then overall, again, he said that they're trying to bring in good decision making from a risk management standpoint. I thought that was interesting, the fact that he's using risk management, but again, as a term, but that comes into the fact, again, that Powell is more of a practitioner than a ivory tower type of central bank leader there. And he says that if we were to over-tighten, we could then use our tools strongly to support the economy. Whereas if we don't get inflation under control because we didn't tighten enough, then we're in a situation where inflation will become entrenched and the cost, employment costs in particular, will be much higher potentially. So from a risk management standpoint, we want to be sure that we don't make the mistake of either failing to tighten enough or of loosening policy too soon.
Winter is coming.
That's right. That's right. If, for those that don't know the reference there, that's definitely a Game of Thrones thing that just says get strapped in for some pain that's coming through. So there's two other interesting things I'll just bring up before I close off here, maybe three. But there was a question around the let's see here, the impact of the strong U.S. economy coupled with the aggressive Fed and how that impacted the backdrop of the rest of the world and the potential for a global recession there. And, you know, for the first minute or two, Powell comes out and acknowledges the global pain, talking about the U.K., the impact in broader Europe, as well as some of the fallout from the Russian invasion of the Ukraine and China. But then he closes it off right on point again. He says, we need to use our tools to get inflation under control. The world's not going to be better off if we fail to do that. That's a task we need to do. Price stability in the United States is a good thing for the global economy over a long period of time. Price stability is the kind of thing that pays dividends for our economy for decades, hopefully, even though it may be difficult to get it back. Getting it back is something that gives, that provides value to people we serve for the long run. I should have scrubbed this quotes a little bit better, but overall, I think the message is clear there that it's kind of the America first policy, and just you know, let the others kind of deal with the fallout as it serves our, provides value to the people he served for the long run. And then finally, it's something that we've been talking about. The last question that I'll hit on was something that we've been talking about on Monday morning minutes for a while, is the idea of the lagged housing data that appears in the inflation baskets relative to the real-time housing activity measures that you get on a more periodic basis, on a more frequent basis, I should say. And his answer around that was the private measures are, of course, good at picking up the new rents and prices that show up inflation baskets, but there are still people who have non-new rents or housing prices in the pipeline, and that contributes to the lagged effect in the inflation basket. And then he goes on to say that the right way to think about inflation is to look at the measures that we look at. I'm guessing that's the owner's equivalent rent component within the CPI as well as the PCE, but that they also know that at some point you're going to see rents coming down. So at least they're weighing down that the kind of the more coincident type of indicators along with this kind of delayed lag effect that they have in the inflation basket. So it's something that it's good to hear them to acknowledge. But for those who are less familiar with owner's equivalent rent and the effect that it has in the inflation baskets, on Monday Morning Minutes, we have at least two episodes talking about that. Most recently, we have episode 85 that we recorded on September 30th, 2022, deals specifically with housing and CPI. And then on episode 30, that was recorded in August 27th, 2021, we also have another where I think we dig down into a study by the two members of the Dallas Federal Reserve that kind of dig into this lagged effect. But yeah, I think those were kind of the highlights that we saw from both the prepared remarks and the Q&A. But overall, just, you know, like you said, all the winter's coming, kind of strap in, definitely hit hard. And, you know, for any doves that were kind of, you know, holding out, you know, for this press conference, I think Powell shot them down. So we'll see what the next week comes. As you know, I like to kind of wait for some of the noise to dissipate in at least in market activity for the first 2 days, first 2 or 3 days, immediately after the meeting, and kind of look forward to the next week to see where the trend is going to take us.
Definitely, definitely was a hawkish meeting. And as you said, the hawk was out for doves, and Jay was out there with his talons out.
That's right. So with that, do you want to kick us off? What are some of the things we should keep our eye on next week?
Yeah. So next week is a pretty light week, but I think an important week. Monday, you get consumer credit for September, and that's a very noisy indicator. But nonetheless, it's good to watch that and see how the consumer's doing. Tuesday, November 8th, you get the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index for October. The estimate is for it to come in 91.5, which is a slight decline from the previous reading of 92.1. We'll see how that comes in. I think that's important, but I don't think it's the most important thing that's going to be coming out next week, which is CPI. On Thursday, November 10th, we're getting CPI for October. The year-over-year expected number is 7.9%, which is 0.3% less than the previous print of 8.2%. And then that leaves the CPI ex food and energy year-over-year for October at an expectation of positive 6.5%, a decrease from the previous print of 6.6%. I think that's really the most important data print for next week. And it's what the market and all market participants' eyes are going to be on that information as it hits the tape. Then we also get initial jobless claims on Thursday. The expectation is for 220K, an increase of 3K. And continuing claims is expected to be at 1.5 million, very similar to the previous print. And lastly, on Friday, the 11th, we have the University of Michigan sentiment survey come out, and the expectation is for 59.5, a decrease from the previous of 59.9. So I don't think that's a good thing. Maybe we'll get a little bit of a boost for Veterans Day, who knows, but we'll see what happens in the bloodless verdict of the market next week.
Yeah, so I guess stay tuned for that. Definitely some market moving data points that I believe we only have. Let's see, so this comes out on the 10th for CPI. So it looks like we'll probably have two more CPI prints before the December meeting, which is set to the December FOMC meeting, I should be clear there, which is scheduled for December 13th and 14th, with the press conference coming out on the 14th of December there. So we'll have two CPIs in hand before then, and then one more PCE. So we'll see alongside, let's see, I guess it would be one more jobs data point before then, in terms of the Pizza Friday that we'd like to talk about there. So a lot of things can change between now and December meeting. So we'll have to catch up and see how that works out. But I think that wraps it up for this week, Eric. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Monday Morning Minutes.
Yeah, thanks to all our listeners out there for this episode of Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can check out the latest ones before the bell on Mondays. Monday Morning Minutes is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Hit us up at DL Minutes and send us your questions. Or you can email minutes@doubleline.com and hopefully we'll be able to get those in the topic of the week.
Indeed. And you can always find out more information about Double Line at our website, doubleline.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel where you can search us for Double Line Capital there. And on that YouTube channel, we do have Ken Shinoda's latest episode of Channel 11, where he is hosting a guest, Dr. Lindsay. I'm going to brutalize the name here on Pigzo. She's the chief economist and managing director at Stifel. So that's definitely an interesting and timely conversation to check out. And then also, I don't see it on here yet, but I did mention before when Jeffrey Gundlach was on CNBC earlier this week. So that should be coming out on our YouTube channel as well, coming up shortly if it hasn't by the time you listen to this. So definitely check it out. But with that, don't forget to follow me and Jeff Sherman here on the Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. I hope everyone has a great week and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without the expressed written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates make any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Liability, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk. Copyright 2022, DoubleLine.